Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey, and with me today is my co-host, Nadia Oxford. It's just the two of us.
It is.
Yep, it's just the two of us back to normal after kind of a crazy July. And we're going to be talking this week about, well, a lot of things, actually, because we're kind of hitting that last week before the storm. It's kind of the calm before the storm.
Indeed.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to be able to relax a little bit over July, catch up on some games that we had kind of missed. I played a lot of Pocket Card Jockey over July, Nadia.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. That stuff's pretty addictive, isn't it?
Were we talking about this on a podcast or video or something?
We mentioned it briefly last week. Yeah, because you mentioned you had like Ponyboy.
Rapidash King,
that's it.
Yeah, that was so awesome. I haven't had a chance to play much Pocket Card Jockey since, but it's definitely been at the back of my mind. And I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's my game of the year right now.
It's definitely getting a mention on my end of the year list.
You should definitely check that out if you haven't, but we're going to talk a little bit about what we've been playing. We're going to talk a little bit about the ongoing mess that is Pokemon Go and whether or not Game Freak and Nintendo should maybe take a greater hand in this. Mm-hmm. And we're going to finish with the lesser-known RPGs. Like, I want to hear your pitches. I want to hear your pitches for the lesser-known RPGs that everybody should be playing. So we'll read a few tweets from that and discuss it, but... yeah, let's get started. Nadia, you've been playing a little RPG that is fairly well known to a small set of fans, but isn't known, especially well known to the greater RPG audience, and that's Ys, Oath and Fel'Ghana. So, and you said you're almost done with it. So I'm kind of curious, like, is this your first time? And like, what do you think?
It's actually not my first Ys game. My first was... E6, Arc of whatever it was called. The thing about the
Arc
Ys
of
game,
whatever.
Yeah. I love the Ys games that I've played so far, but they always have these crazy subtitles. I am a big fan of both the games that I have played, which was 6 and Oath and Fel'Ghana. And they're very, very... when they say it's an action RPG, they are not joking about the action part. It is a very fast-paced, very challenging RPG, and I really enjoyed my time with it. I'm not quite done, but I am definitely getting there. They're not extremely long games. The Ys series, as I mentioned, in our power poll or one of our community questions, it's a series I want to get caught up on if possible. It's always been in the back of my mind, even when I was a kid. To me, it was always one of those things that the Sega kids played, and I was like the Nintendo kid, so I was just like, I'm going to stick to Final Fantasy for now.
Ys 1 and 2 was on, like, every platform ever, though.
Yeah, especially now.
Even back then, though, like, it felt like it was being ported to everything.
Yeah, it's funny, because I was looking back, and it's like, I saw it was on, like, Nintendo and Super Nintendo and everything, and yet it never really made a huge impact in North America, I think, especially compared to Europe. I know Europe, it was pretty huge.
Well, I think it's because it was an RPG, and... I mean, it had a weird name, and I guess just, like, it didn't make a huge impact on Americans over here playing on, like, the Super Nintendo, because, as we all know, RPGs still had a bit of a stigma back then.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
I think it was a PC RPG at that. It was designed with the PC in mind, so it was getting ported to all these consoles, but...
yeah, and given how Europe, they tended to be more PC-heavy in the first place... that was probably a factor.
Yeah, a little more. Yeah, no, that's not actually... and you mentioned that you always saw them as a Sega kid thing. Well, Sega is definitely a lot more prevalent in Europe.
Yeah, that's very true. But have you played any of the Ys games?
I have, actually. I played... Ys 7 was actually my first.
I haven't played it yet.
Oh, you should play it. It's actually... it's pretty good. I forget if you can get it on the PlayStation Store for the Vita right now. Mm-hmm. If not, it's a shame because it was a PSP game.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a little bit of a departure from other Ys games mm-hmm. because most Ys games have you playing as only one character, like yes. The main character who's in every game.
Yeah, Adel.
Who goes on adventures across the land, and he has his friends and everything. But in E7, you could have a party of three.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a party. It was a party-based action RPG, and it actually worked pretty well. Mm-hmm. And like most E's games, it had a great fantastic soundtrack. And
yeah,
I'll drop in a little bit of music from the E's games a little bit later, but it. It jumped out at me primarily for the soundtrack. The combat was just okay. It was better than Kingdom Hearts. It was more tactical than that. You could have just hack and slash your way through it. But and the monsters were a lot of fun. I remember that a lot of hardcore Ys fans back in the day were pretty hard on it because they perceived it to be too easy.
I could see that being a criticism because Ys players, from what I can tell, they really cherish their challenge.
Yeah, and old school fans of any series will always gripe that the newer entries are too easy.
Yeah, it's too watered down.
It's pretty much, or it's too hard.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as a proper medium.
No,
and it's
really
the ones who complain the most are usually the hardcore fans who have played for hundreds of hours and know the game backward and forward and go, well, now it's too easy.
Yeah. You can't have it always, guys.
Absolutely not. I mean, I said this is totally a digression, but I've played like 100 hours every year of Madden for like 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I'm like, oh, it's too easy. And like, I can beat the computer with one arm tied behind my back. Whereas like 6 years ago, it would have been like, I couldn't even win a game against the computer. So
I don't even know the rules of football.
Yeah, you definitely... It's one of those things where you play a game so much that you become a one percenter without even knowing it.
Yeah.
In terms of the fandom, and you know it inside and out, and it becomes easy. Like people saying, well, Dark Souls is easy now. It's like,
No.
No, not really, but... Actually, that was totally a straw man. I don't know anybody who actually says that Dark Souls is easy now.
I've seen people say it, but I don't know anyone who says that.
Yeah, well, even the hardcore fans will say things like, the Nameless King is actually still really freaking hard in Dark Souls 3. Like, nobody would go, oh, no, it's like for babies now. Though there are people waiting in the wings to do that.
Of course.
Guarantee it. There's totally people waiting in the wings to do that. But Oath of Fel'Ghana, I only played a bit of it. Mm-hmm. I played a bit of it when it came out on the PSP, and a bit of it again when it came out on the PC. And... I was impressed by the soundtrack, and I liked the more traditionalist approach. I liked having only one character. It felt almost like a Zelda game in some respects.
Yeah, it's very Zelda, but whereas Zelda is more focused on puzzles, Ys is more focused a little bit on combat.
Yeah, and I'm actually okay with that because I don't like puzzles. I hate puzzles.
When it comes to if I'm given a choice between swinging a sword and pushing boxes, I'm going to go with the sword.
Oh, absolutely. So what are kind of your favorite aspects of Oath and Fel'Ghana, out of curiosity?
Well, as you mentioned, the soundtrack is pretty awesome. Although, the strange thing about the soundtrack is that it, even though it's very good, a lot of the tunes don't fit. There's a lot of hard rock going on in these, like, kind of, like, snowy mountains and nice forests and whatnot, so that's a little odd, but it's still very nice to listen to, so no major complaints there. Beyond that, I like the action. I like how fast-paced it is. I like how satisfying it is. There's, like, later in the game you get a hold of, like, spells and stuff that you can really wallop your enemies with. The bosses are pretty challenging, and I just like the character Adel. I think I know he's, like, kind of a cipher, but he's a fun cipher.
Yeah, he is... My recollection of Adel is that he's kind of your typical hot-blooded, red-haired hero.
He's not even hot-blooded. He's just a dude who does things.
Dude who does things.
He's like, Adel, can you help me with this, putting this thing on a high shelf? Yeah, sure. And then, like, when he talks, he doesn't really talk, but he kind of explains the situation in third person. You know what I mean? Like, he'll meet a character, and the character will say, "Hey, what's up?" And then it'll say in, like, blue text, it'll explain the situation up until that point.
I always love it when that happens in games.
Yeah, and I remember Illusion of Gaia had the same thing going on, except they couldn't decide when to do it and when not to, so it was very inconsistent, but Ys is very consistent about it.
Yes, absolutely. Have you had, now that you've played Oath and Fel'Ghana, like, are you interested in maybe picking up memories of, is it Calcutta or Salceda?
Yeah,
or?
I'd like to try that one next. Is that, yeah. Is that a numbered game? Is that 7 or is that,
I don't think it's numbered.
Okay, because some of them are numbered, some of them aren't.
But that doesn't even necessarily matter because...
No.
Oath and Fel'Ghana is not numbered either.
No, they're all very self-contained from what I've played so far.
Yeah.
Adol goes to a new place, he makes some friends, he saves the day, and he moves on.
The numbering is actually kind of complicated in the series, because there are some remakes in there as well.
No kidding.
Is Oath and Fel'Ghana a remake? I can't remember. God.
I don't think so, but there are like 50 million remakes.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, it's on every platform ever.
Even mobile.
Yeah, I know that Oath and Fel'Ghana is on Steam. I'm kind of curious, like, what other Ys games ended up making it over to the PC.
Seems like most of the modern ones at least have. The ones that have been on Vita and PSP, most of those are on there.
Oh, that's good at least.
Yeah.
So if you kind of missed out on Ys, you can always play it on PC or Vita. Beyond that, it's unfortunate that the Ys series hasn't really made it to a console like the PlayStation 4.
I agree. I'd really like to see it go onto consoles. From what I've played of Ys and talked about it and talked with the community, it's a very dedicated community.
Yes, absolutely. So, okay, they have Ys, Oath and Fel'Ghana, Ys Origin, Ys 6, the Ark of Napashtim.
Something like that.
Ys 1 and 2 Chronicles Plus, and that's actually it. But still, that's a fair amount of Ys right there.
Do they not have the Celestica or whatever we call it?
Memories of Calcutta?
Yeah. Did you say Memories of Calcutta?
Is it Salceda? Calcutta?
Something like that. And that's not on there? Oh.
No. I've forgotten about Ys Origin. That's the prequel before Ys 1 and 2.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I remember when that came out. And that was also pretty good. And that was a big deal because that was kind of their debut on the PC.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I really love playing this on the PC. And this was 2012 when, like, JRPGs were not, like, a thing on Steam yet. Yeah. So, like, having it on there was, like, awesome.
Yeah.
But, okay, well, I have been trying to get back into Witcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
And with mixed success. I've done a bunch of the main story quests, and I've ridden around on my horse, and I've marveled at how beautiful the world is. And so last night, my partner was out, and I had the house to myself, and I was like, ah, great. I'm going to play some Witcher 3, and I'm going to totally, like, make a real dent in this game before I have to pick up some more RPGs, like, mm-hmm. or before I have to pick up some other games, and I get distracted again. And I was playing a quest where there's a baby. This baby was stillborn and buried and comes back to life as this monster, like, that's called a botchling. And botchlings are like real gross.
They would be.
Yeah. And then the next scene is like you escorting the would-be father of this thing. While he has to carry it in his arms, and you have to calm it down with your spells, or else it'll eat his face.
I shouldn't laugh, but holy crap.
I'm not even joking. Like, it'll rip out his jugular if, like, it gets too, like, wound up. So you gotta calm it, but in the meantime, while also fighting Race.
Yeah.
And, okay, that was fine and everything. And then finally, like, you bury the thing and it comes back to life as a lubberkin, which is like the spirit that is bound to the blood of its parents and will like show you the way, because you're trying to find the main character, that character's wife and child who like ran away. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do that. And there's a lot of story involved, and I found myself like zoning out.
How can you zone out when there's zombie stillborn babies like being carried by fathers who are going to be eaten by them?
I mean, I wasn't zoning out during that part.
Oh, okay.
But I found myself kind of just playing out the string a little bit. And I was like going, yeah, I'm playing this game. And why am I not getting anything out of this game? It was really bothering me because, like, I'm looking at this game and I'm like, God, it's gorgeous. Combat's not too bad. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's still pretty solid. It does a lot of really cool things. Like, the quests, there's no such thing as a throwaway quest in this game. Like, you will, like, it seems like every quest has its own kind of interesting story to it.
Right.
And it's, like, multiple parts. And it's just such a vast game. And I can totally understand why people are like so in love with it, but I can't figure out why this game just can't seem to get its hooks in me.
Is it to do with the fact maybe you're not so big into open world games by the sounds of it?
I like open world games. I mean, I love Skyrim. I loved Fallout 4.
It's funny that like Skyrim, it's like I love Skyrim too, but it's so aimless, whereas I hear Witcher 3 is more focused, so that's interesting.
Maybe it's the fact that it's focused that I don't like it.
That could be.
Yeah, maybe it's too focused.
A little too focused. You really got to hit a nice happy medium, apparently.
I mean, like, if in so many respects, like, Skyrim... in so many respects, Witcher 3 is a better game than Fallout 4 in the respect of the quests are more interesting, the story is better, the graphics are better. It's truly amazing to ride around on your horse.
Right.
But there's just something that's not getting into me, and I think the reason is that it's so story-driven.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time watching cutscenes. You have to really be engaged with the narrative, and that's fine, but it kind of creates a remove for me, because you're playing as, you know, Geralt, or as Mike and I call him, medieval Batman.
That's pretty much what he is.
Yeah, and so I'm watching a novel, essentially. Like, I'm watching a TV show.
Course what he was. Like, he's a comic character over in Poland.
Yes, exactly. So I'm watching a TV show, essentially. I don't watch a lot of TV.
I know what you mean, because I don't watch a lot of TV either. I find that I just don't have the attention span for it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's an attention span thing or what, but, like, I'm in the middle of... I'm actually very close to the end of Breaking Bad. And the show's great, but so many people tell me that they can binge a show, like they can totally binge watch a show. I can't do that.
No, I can't do that either, except I think I binged Gravity Falls and that was it.
I kind of binged Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, a story can get its hooks into me, like where I'm just like, I have to know what happens next, right? But it's comparatively rare.
Yes.
And I think the reason that Skyrim and Fallout 4 ultimately got their hooks in me more was because I created my own character and self-inserted.
Yeah. I was going to suggest maybe that's the other reason, because in those games, you can really project yourself into your characters.
And not only that, but like, I mean, I've talked about this elsewhere on the podcast, but like in Fallout 4, I was, you know, building up a... I was building up, like, my own, like, settlements and everything, and, like, kind of really putting my mark on the landscape. Whereas in Witcher 3, you are part of the world, and you're, like, riding around through it, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff to collect, and you can forge new weapons, and there's plenty of... there's some customization. Like, the mechanics are deep. Enough. Yeah. It's fine. But you're kind of riding through a movie set in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see what you mean.
It's the same reason that I've never been able to get into Grand Theft Auto. In the respect that Well, aside from the fact that pretty much every one of those games is basically Scarface, which...
Scarface the game.
It's like gangster stuff, which is fine. And I get tired of just driving around in an open world, so... because the open world doesn't feel real to me, because I'm not really interacting with it in any meaningful way.
Right.
No, the Does this make sense to you?
No, it makes sense to me, although the thing that sometimes holds me back in open worlds is motion sickness.
You were saying that.
Yeah, so it's really a crapshoot. That's why I never really got into Grand Theft Auto, because I played, it was 3 or 4, and I just got really sick, and I said, no, forget it. Which is too bad, because the one I was really interested in was Vice City, because it was so 80s.
Actually, Vice City was the one I did manage to get into.
At that point, I would try.
I really liked Vice City because it was a lot more, I guess, focused. And you spent a lot of time just driving around the city. And like sometimes if you get bored, you can do stuff like harass the cops and take them on a high-speed chase. And that was fun.
And
it really was just Scarface.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, the mechanics could get a little gnarly at times. Like, the missions were stupid. Mm-hmm. And... like, San Andreas was great, but then the missions were, like, got really hard and obnoxious, and, like, it was a pain even to get out of Los Santos.
Yeah.
And from that point on, and then GTA, like, veered off in a totally different direction, and I actually hated the characters in GTA 5, so, like, I hated them so much that I just couldn't engage with the game. I think I would have been able to engage with that game if I had been able to just create my own character and drop them in.
Yeah.
Which I guess you can do in GTA Online, but all the characters were so unlikable in their own way, which I understand that was what they were going for, but I couldn't identify with any of them.
Yeah.
No, like, not even a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just never even considered Grand Theft Auto 5 for the same reason. It's just I didn't really like the characters. I didn't want to play as these people. And I understand they have their reasons, they have their motivations, they have their problems, but you do your thing, I'll do mine.
I think, and this is getting way off the rails, but I think it can speak to the broader point of video game storytelling, which is actually pretty important to an RPG. Well, like, Breaking Bad is kind of similar to GTA in that a lot of the characters in that show are anti-heroes. Like, they're very unlikable people.
Yes.
But even in that show, you can still find pretty sympathetic characters that you can kind of root for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I couldn't really root for anyone in GTA 5.
Yeah.
Now, in Witcher 3, I mean, I think Geralt's a fairly sympathetic character, if a little hard-bitten. I mean, he's very much your... hard-bitten protagonist, speaks in a gravelly voice, has kind of a cynical view of the world, seems a little tragic.
Yeah, because I know his background isn't so happy.
And he's chasing after a former kind of a student slash protege of his, this really awesome girl who periodically appears in flashbacks. And I always enjoy her scenes the most because she's so much fun and she's so much like a breath of fresh air. Mm-hmm. And if I were playing as her, like the entire game, I think I would be way more into it.
That should be DLC. But I think the DLC is over, isn't it?
Yeah, but there are two gigantic expansion packs, Hearts of Stone and Blood and Wine, which I gotta say, like that. In light of the fact that I'm like having a hard time like focusing enough to even get to like level 10 in this game.
Yeah, you should probably
I can't even imagine getting to the point of being able to do all of this expansion content.
Yeah.
It's really bothering me though that I can't get into Witcher 3. I wish I liked it more.
Yeah, there's a lot of games sometimes you come across where you're like, I really wish I liked this more because it deserves to be liked more, but I just can't do it.
You know, like, so earlier this year I played Dark Souls 3. And that game really got its hooks into me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think tonally, it's kind of somewhat similar to Witcher 3, but also very different.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reflecting on that. And I think there are a few reasons why Dark Souls 3 ended up getting its hooks into me a lot more than Witcher 3. The story is really minimalist.
Yeah.
I like minimalist storytelling in RPGs or video games in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more mechanics focused than Witcher 3. In terms of the weapons that you're going to use, how you develop your character, that kind of thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
So I spend a lot more time like thinking about what direction I'm going to go with my character and right. how I'm going to build up my stats. Whereas in Witcher 3, it's almost like an afterthought. Mm-hmm. It's like periodically I level up and I'm like, oh, I guess I'll put a point here. Okay. And moving on.
Moving on.
Sometimes I get a sword. And sometimes it's a better sword. Whereas in like Dark Souls 3, you know, you get like this huge array of weapons, right? Yeah. So that can like dramatically impact your playstyle, which I find really compelling.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. So I think by the sounds of it, Witcher 3 is really just a lot more focused and zoned in, which is great if you're into that sort of thing. Because
absolutely.
Frankly, that's the sort of thing I like from an RPG, but I can see why someone else wouldn't.
Yeah. And that actually made me think about, you know what? RPG, like, doesn't get nearly enough freaking credit, and it actually drives me kind of insane.
What's that?
Dragon Age Inquisition.
Yeah, I was just actually wondering, like, what do you think of Dragon Age? Because Dragon Age kind of has a lot of what you seem to like.
I played all three.
Uh-huh.
I liked Dragon Age Origins quite a bit back in the day. Mm-hmm. Because I love the idea of creating a character and playing out an origin story.
Right.
That impacted, like, the entirety of their story. And it had some really great dungeons, some really long freaking dungeons. And mm-hmm. it was a lot more of the old school BioWare kind of approach.
Yeah.
It was basically an isometric RPG. But with a four-player party, it was fun. It was old school. And it had it riffed a little too heavily on Lord of the Rings and Song of Ice and Fire.
But a lot of fantasy back then.
Yeah, like Dragon Age has always had a problem with having its own identity.
Yeah.
It's tried its best, but I feel like the world that it's rooted in isn't hugely interesting, mm-hmm. which is kind of its downfall.
Yeah, it's very by the numbers. Not that it's bad by any means, just not too surprising, but very comforting.
Anyway, I was into Dragon Age Origins. I think I might have told the story on the podcast before, but I did the guide for Dragon Age Origins mm-hmm. back when I was at 1UP. And when I finished the guide, like, I played it nonstop for like 2 weeks before it came out on my crappy PC, where it was like a slideshow at times. But damn it, I finished that guide.
Nice.
And one of the doctors came in, Greg, I can never pronounce his name, Zeshik, came in to do a Retronauts episode about BioWare. And then afterward, we went out to dinner with him and like had sushi. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun because I had finished Dragon Age, so I was able to basically like sit there and talk to him about it like nice. For the entire night. And that was like super awesome and super rewarding. It was one of my favorite kind of memories of being in the press was just being able to talk to this kind of this legend, you know.
And in
game development,
setting.
Just so casual, in such a casual setting
yeah.
about a game that hadn't even come out yet. And obviously was so, you know, still so fresh on its mind.
Yeah.
And I think this was before BioWare was bought out by EA. Yeah. No, they had been bought out by EA by this point.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was when BioWare started to go downhill, alas, because Dragon Age 2 wasn't that great.
But the latest one was pretty good, wasn't it?
Inquisition, yes. So Inquisition, I think one of the things that was really compelling to me was my favorite moment was when you went to a new area and you got the report from a scout, but and you would see some landmarks, but otherwise the map was dark. Mm-hmm. There was, and so you had to get on your horse, or in my case, battle moose.
Oh, the battle mooses.
And ride out into the wilderness and just explore.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
pretty cool.
That was awesome. Like, I loved that. And that made me enjoy just made me take in the scenery a lot more, like mm-hmm. really made me a lot more engaged. And it was so much fun to kind of uncover the story of each individual zone.
Yes.
And a lot of people complained about the combat in that game, and I guess that's a fair point. I think it's definitely weaker than like almost any other RPG of that type. It's a little bit shallow. It was still fun, like building up a party and like switching between them. Like I thought it worked fairly well as a tactical party based RPG in a console setting.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's not amazing. It's fine. It's passable. But I think the most compelling aspects of it were definitely the exploration. And also, like, it had one of the best quests that I've ever done in an RPG, which was the Orlesian Ball, where you're both socializing, like, you're trying to be social, and you're meeting, like, all, trying to figure out, like, who this one killer is, and you're trying to sneak away to, like, investigate the palace, while also not being, like, without having the fact that you're missing go notice, so you have to, like, really hurry.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it was so good. It was such a well-done major quest. And it did such a phenomenal job of building up to, like, these really great set pieces. The conclusion was just okay. The conclusion wasn't amazing, all things considered. But stuff like, I forget what the Night Watch variant is. The variant of the Night Watch in the Grey Wardens. They're just the Night Watch from Game of Thrones. But yeah, the Grey Wardens, this big battle that involves the Grey Wardens. Really, really, really good. This whole like bit where you're fighting through the corrupted paladins up until you finally take their fortress and then you take control of it for your organization.
Mm-hmm.
That was really fun. Like, I feel like so many people picked up Dragon Age Inquisition and were faced with this giant, rather boring starting area where mm-hmm. there were a lot of things to do, but they were mostly fetch quests.
Yeah, see, I didn't really
get into the meat of the game.
I didn't pick it up because I said to people, like, I played the first Dragon Age, and I haven't played any of them since. And I said, should I pick up Inquisition? And they said, oh, no, not unless you play the other one. So it was one of those, you know, chase my own tail moments.
I don't actually agree with that. It's true, like, there's a major character from Origins who, like, has a fairly large role to play in Inquisition.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't actually think that it's that important because a lot of the background is detailed for you.
Yeah.
And yeah, it picks up straight from Dragon Age 2, but it's its own self-contained story with a new character. It's not like you're carrying over a character from the previous game. Like, each game has a new protagonist.
Yeah, but usually when people say, oh, you should, you should play the other ones first, I know that's usually almost never required for most games, but I get so intimidated at the thought of it that I just kind of freeze up.
I feel like Dragon Age Origins, well, they're such different games, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And each one is self-contained.
Mm-hmm.
And Dragon Age 2 is so flawed that I sort of feel like it's just in your best interest to pick up Inquisition.
Right. That's a good point.
There are people who will defend Dragon Age 2. I just strongly disagree with them. It was an ambitious and interesting game in its own right, but it was so hampered by the fact that it was rushed out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they weren't able to realize their ambitions. It was too bad.
Yeah.
It's funny, because they were like, we're the first RPG to be told over the course of, like, a 10-year period. And I'm like, Dragon Quest V was told over, like, a 25-year period.
You gotta give respect to Dragon Quest V, man. Anyone who doesn't, meets my fist.
It just goes to show how myopic some people can be when it comes to developing their own RPG. It's like, we were the first people to do this. No, you're not.
You probably weren't.
Anyway, I'm not trying to say that Witcher 3 is better than Dragon Age Inquisition. Actually, I think they're very different games with their own relative merits.
Mm-hmm.
I just was reflecting on the fact that I liked Dragon Age Inquisition quite a bit, and it tends to be like written off by people like it was somehow a bad game.
Right.
When in actuality, it really wasn't. It was actually a very good game, and you should go play it.
Yeah, I should. I'll put it on the pile.
As for Witcher 3, I swear to God, I'm going to keep playing this game. It's going to get its hooks in me.
You don't have to force yourself to like something, Kat.
No, this game is good, and I'm going to appreciate it.
All right, I can respect that.
It goes to show how hard our job is, though, because, like, if you're a movie critic, right, you can sit down and you're like, I am going to watch the classics. I need to watch Casablanca. Like, I mean, obviously, that's a movie that every movie buff should watch. Okay, I've watched Casablanca. That took, like, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go watch, Fight Club now. I'm going to go watch Vertigo. I'm going to go watch Citizen Kane. Like, these movies are doable. Like, even if you're not into them, they're only, like, an hour and a half, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I was on a flight back from Scotland, and I decided to watch From Russia with Love, because I had never seen From Russia with Love. And I was so bored. It was such a boring movie. I'm sorry, Bond fans. It was pretty boring. Yeah, it was a lot of James Bond going, women, ha!
Yeah, I'm not a Bond fan myself, and when I told that to an ex-friend of mine, he said, oh, that's because they're not meant for women, the movies. It's like, yeah, we're ex-friends, so that explains a lot.
Look, I can understand its individual merits, but personally, I found that movie quite boring.
Yeah.
If it had been like a 100-hour RPG, there's no way in hell I would have finished it.
James Bond is an RPG. Oh my gosh, that would be a thing.
That'd be kind of interesting thing.
It would, actually.
Actually, I think that it was Obsidian that tried to do something similar to that, and the name escapes me, but they did a Secret Agent RPG, which was actually kind of rad. Even if it was really buggy and had its own flaws, but it just goes to show, like, even a 10-hour game can be like just a bear to get through if you're not really enjoying it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I will try to get more into Witcher 3. Are you gonna pick up Witcher 3 at any point?
I'd really like to someday when I actually have the time. But who has the time?
Not me. Certainly not coming up. I was using this as an opportunity to kind of get back into my backlog, but
yeah, but maybe once winter comes around and we're done with the holiday rush.
Yeah, maybe.
On sale?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's just not up to my taste. Oh well. We're actually kind of running out of time a little bit, but I feel like we should still address, like, kind of the backlash that Pokemon Go has been facing. And we talked about this in the flagship podcast as well, so I don't want to kind of rehash what Mike and I talked about, but there was something interesting that you said in our Slack channel, and that was that you were kind of wondering, like, why, like, say the Pokemon Company or Nintendo weren't taking more control of the series and having a greater hand in it, because it sure seems like at times Niantic is in over their head.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying they should take control by any means. I'm saying that maybe Nintendo or the Pokemon Company, I know Game Freak has their hands full probably, but someone with experience should be giving Niantic a couple of staff members, you know what I mean? Just to kind of help pick up their tails, because this is Pokemon Go is a very, very big thing, and I understand that it kind of grew way beyond what anyone predicted, even though it's Pokemon, but you can't keep having subpar performance and expecting people to be happy about it and being slow about your fixes. I understand they're very small staff, they're in over their heads, but Nintendo and the Pokemon Company, you know, even though they're not nearly as involved with the game, their names are still attached to it. Look what happened to Nintendo's stock when people thought, oh, they made Pokemon Go, and Nintendo's like, no, we didn't. And then the investors are like, oh, we're idiots. And yes, you are.
My first thought was, well, yeah, no, like my first thought were kind of along those lines, like, well, I mean, it's a Pokemon game, and like it or not, this is like kind of tarnishing the brand, right? Mm,
exactly.
But at the same time, like, Pokemon has had a ton of crappy spin-offs.
Sure.
I mean, like, who remembers Pokemon Ranger?
I remember they had bandanas.
Or Pokemon Ranger was a good idea that was underrealized, I think. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have minded playing a sequel to that one.
Yeah, but
or Pokemon Trozzi.
Oh, yeah, that piece of garbage. But the difference is nobody really...
Hey, you, Pikachu.
Nobody played those. Well, I mean, other than, like, the hardcore Pokemon fans, of course. But, like, Pokemon Go, no one can stop talking about this damn game. And I love it, don't get me wrong. But if you just keep on shoveling, like, this subpar game in our faces, especially it's a lucky day when I can connect to the servers, never mind, like, you know, the nonsense about the tracker and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate, but I mean, I kind of agree with you in the sense that this is the first time a lot of people are coming back to Pokemon.
Exactly.
I feel like Pokemon has kind of remained in the zeitgeist over the past, I don't know, 15 years, because a lot of people either grew up with it or they're still playing it now.
Mm-hmm.
And at a minimum, like, they still know who the 150 monsters are.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Like, they're coming back and they're going, wow, Pokemon, this is great. And more than a few people I've seen have been like, oh, yeah, Pokemon, and then have gone and picked up the actual games.
Yeah, and that's good, too.
Which, if that's what Pokemon Go ends up being, it's the game that bridges a lot of people back into the actual series.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe it won't be so bad for the brand, regardless.
That kind of that ties in Nintendo's philosophy with mobile, which is getting people back into, like, you know, their stuff through mobile, even though, of course, they don't really have a hand in Go. But, my heart really goes out to Niantic because, as I said before, they're small. But one thing they really need to work on, too, is communication. And I think they're finally getting around to that.
Yeah. If one thing that I've learned is that if you don't have really strong communication with your base, your fan base, they will get unruly really quickly.
They really will. And if nothing else, then Mighty No. 9 should teach developers that much.
I know that. So this is kind of a totally different thing, but I used to play a lot of Star Trek Online.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Trek Online also had a pretty small staff running it. And when you're, like, passionately into a game and you perceive these problems and you desperately want them to be fixed, and it doesn't feel like the development team hears you or seemingly cares.
Exactly.
And not only do they not care, but they're like hitting on totally different things. Right, let me give you a different example. Until yesterday, I was a season ticket holder for the San Jose Earthquakes. Mm-hmm. I canceled my season tickets because I didn't feel like I was being heard. I found it pretty galling that they raised the ticket prices on me while also putting a kind of a subpar product on the field, not making the playoffs, and constantly trumpeting, like, BS I didn't care about, like stupid promotions, mm-hmm. or like things that were like very marketing driven, but weren't actually impacting the team itself.
Right.
And it made them seem really tone deaf, and the price rise was kind of the final straw. And right. I think this can kind of apply to games as well. Like, Niantic comes off as extremely tone deaf right now.
They really do. And I don't think it's not that they care. Of course they care, but they don't have the staff. I think they're only just getting around to hiring a community manager.
Yeah, well, that's kind of on them, right?
I mean, it really is.
They should have had, I don't care if they didn't know that it was going to become a global phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
You should at least have a community manager.
You really should especially prepared. Since hearing about it from other people. They were kind of the same way with their support for Ingress. And, you know, if you should, if that's the case, then there's really no excuse to be slacking off of Pokemon Go.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. This is not their first trip to the rodeo,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
They've done this before, and they had a really passionate community for Ingress as well. And so it's kind of stunning to me that, like, the very basics of community management seems to be kind of lost on them.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get me wrong. Like, communities can be obnoxious and unruly in their own right.
Yeah.
But there's a point where you can cross the point of no return.
There really is, and I don't think a lot of the demands people are making are all that, you know, unreasonable
I think people are demanding that the game work.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean,
yeah,
I'll be honest,
I think that's quite fair. Yeah,
I've put money into Pokemon Go, and I'd like it to not screw me over.
Yeah, that would be a little nice. And the fact that they respond like they like are killing fan made trackers while also not addressing like actual like major bugs that are seriously impacting the experience of the game.
Yeah.
It's just a bad look for them.
It is. I can kind of understand why they had to kill the third party trackers. If it was putting any sort of strain on their servers, they don't need that. But they were so slow about getting their reasons over to us that, you know, by the time they did, most people were already bitter about it.
But in the meantime, the new Pokemon's looking really good.
Yeah. I just
what were we going to say?
I'm actually pretty excited for Sun and Moon.
Yeah, me too. I'm really intrigued by these challenges that they're talking about. Did you write that up or did Mike write that up?
No, Mike wrote that up. But I am looking forward to the challenges. They seem to be a replacement for the gyms, which is, I think I've discussed on this podcast before about how I'd really like to see the single player game shaken up for Pokemon. So this is a step in the right direction.
I think I'm always happy when Pokemon does something a little outside the usual battles.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, one of my absolute favorite things in Pokemon is the contests from Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire.
I remember those.
Ah, they're so much fun because, like, well, first of all, it is really well done in terms of, like, building up your monster's appeal and then, like, the little metagame that comes from, like, properly, like, manipulating the judges so that you can win and then earning ribbons. Like, it's a departure from the usual grind of just battling, and it's really clever, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I've wanted in general from Pokemon. There's another example is in Black 2 and White 2, you can make movies with your monsters.
That's right. I remember that. That was fun.
And you're, like, following a script. Oh, my God. It's so much fun. I love it. Like, I love that little mini game. So it heartens me to see that there are going to be kind of non-battle challenges with your monsters Sun and Moon.
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, I'm also glad to see that they're seemingly getting rid of HMs, like for getting rid of stuff like, you know, boulders and trees and stuff that should have been gone generations ago, like with the Pokemon.
It was a gatekeeping device. It was a little clumsy of a gatekeeping device, but
yeah.
At the same time, like,
It worked, like, as that, but, like, having to select it every single time you wanted to, like, get past a tree, it was a little bit...
I mean, it wasn't that big a deal. You just pressed A or whatever.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you had to go into the menu. You could just walk up to it, and your monster would automatically do their move. But, yeah, like, I can definitely see that it was a little clumsy, so I'm kind of okay with them getting rid of HMs.
Yeah.
I was actually playing the original Red and Blue when I was on my vacation.
Mm-hmm.
And just the fact that you only have one technical machine, so you can have to, like, agonize over which monster is going to get that one move. And then also HMs, like, are permanent and can never be removed. How many people have a Charizard with cut?
Me.
That was my first Charizard. Definitely had cut on it.
What am I doing with it now? Nothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, well, good. And you're screwed because you can't breed in the original Pokemon.
Oh, that's
so
right.
Your starter is the only starter you're going to get.
Yep.
So if you put cut on that thing, you better just restart.
It's like a tattoo. It's like a tattoo.
Not that Charizard's any good in that game anyway, but...
Charizard's always good.
But if you are feeling disgruntled with Pokemon Go and you want to play a different Pokemon game, well, Sun and Moon is looking pretty good, so you should pick that up.
I agree.
Alternatively, if you're looking for a different Pokemon game, might I recommend Pokemon Black 2 and White 2? It's actually really, really good.
Those were good games.
It's not the most recent generation, it's like definitely one of the best Pokemon games I've ever played. And it's pretty cheap, I think. Like, you could probably get it for a reasonable price. And you can play it on your 3DS because it's a DS game.
I might actually be the only person in existence who actually really enjoyed X and Y.
I liked X and Y. It was fun. I don't think it was anywhere near as good as Black 2 and White 2. But I loved the dress-up mechanics.
I love the trainer battle, not the trainer battle music, the gym leader battle music. It's just like this amazing, horrible, but beautiful techno thing that I still adore. And when you look
It is completely, like, I don't remember it at all.
Oh, you gotta listen to it again sometime. Like, because looking at the YouTube comments for the sound file itself is like a divide between, oh my god, what is this, and oh my god, this is brilliant.
The X and Y music, as I recall, was pretty forgettable, mm-hmm. which was too bad. Actually, my favorite gym leader music is a tie between... I think actually they have like a lot of really good gym leader music up through Black and White. Mm-hmm. I liked in Black and White that when you got down to their final monster, it would switch over to a really fast version of the traditional theme music.
Yes.
Which like got you into it and you're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. My personal favorite theme about gym leader music is actually from Diamond and Pearl.
I don't even remember that.
Oh yeah, it's super good, and maybe I'll play it a little. This is becoming a music podcast, but
we should do
if
that
I don't drop it into the podcast later for editing, you should go check it out on YouTube or something. But it is kind of darker, mm-hmm. and it has like multiple movements, and it's just interesting to listen to. And it really gets you into the gym leader, it really gets you into the mood of fighting a gym leader. And actually, I think Diamond and Pearl has the best overall soundtrack.
Diamond and Pearl is probably the one Pokemon game, like, I never really gave that much attention to. I really should go back to it.
A lot of people kind of slag on that generation because it was slow. Mm-hmm. Like, the battles kind of took forever to complete, unfortunately, which was too bad. And a lot of people were saying that it was kind of a retread of Ruby and Sapphire, which is fair, but that region is actually one of my favorites. They made a lot of really smart improvements to the battle system that to the point where like it still might actually be my favorite pure battle system mm-hmm. in Pokemon, because you had some really made it felt a little more balanced than later iterations, I suppose I should say. And I had my favorite starter, which is Infernape, so.
That was Chimchar, right?
Yep. If you're going to play the most recent generation game, you should pick up Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire, which is actually better than X and Y, even if you can't dress up your characters.
Yeah, those are.
Though Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire kind of infuriated me because it didn't have any post-game content.
Yeah, that was the one problem with it.
It was too bad. Yeah, it was story-driven, but the story wasn't actually that great.
That's the problem, yeah.
I still love that, like, Gruden comes out and he's like, "Rah, I'm huge, I'm like Godzilla." And then your character, like, gets on his back and he's like, doot, doot, doot. He's, like, giving you a little piggyback and he's like, "Oh, fine, whatever. Fine. Okay, I'm going." Alright, so for our final segment, let's do recommendations for lesser-known RPGs, which I solicited on Twitter. I was just kind of curious to see what people would come up with, and there were two RPGs that came up in particular that I was like, oh yeah, no, those are definitely lesser-known, and definitely are kind of games that have a passionate following. One of them is Golden Sun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that definitely has a very passionate following. I know several fans of that game.
Did you play it?
I played it, but I didn't really get too far in it. It just didn't, talking about it, or going back to our earlier topic, it didn't really sink its hooks into me, but I very much appreciated its existence in that point in time.
It was a GBA game.
Exactly.
It was a GBA RPG. In hindsight, it actually had pretty good graphics. And it had kind of... The battle scenes were from the back. Mm-hmm. It wasn't top down or anything.
Yes.
And it had kind of this faux 3D thing going on.
Yeah, it was definitely a very interesting project. That was a Camelot, wasn't it?
Yes, it was Camelot.
Yeah, so they know what they're doing. They've done good stuff.
And not only that, it ends on a cliffhanger.
Was there Golden Sun 2?
Yeah, and then Golden Sun 2 resolved it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, resolution.
Yeah, so there was it was a two-parter, which was an interesting move on their part. And then there's also Golden Sun for the DS.
That's right.
Which also kind of flew under the radar. I wish I could check right now. I'm kind of curious to see if it's on the Wii U. I don't think it is.
No, I don't think it is.
Which is too bad. But if it's not, it should be. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's another one that came up actually quite a bit. And that was Lufia 2.
I haven't been meaning to play that for the longest time, and I have not gotten around to it, and I'm so mad at myself about that.
Did you ever play the PSP one? I guess not.
No.
Huh? The remake wasn't very good.
I had a PSP, but I never played it.
The PSP remake turned it into an action RPG.
Oh, fun.
More of a traditional action RPG, but at Space Captain Zemo said, Lufia 2 for the SNES, great music, a dynamic cast of characters, puzzles, capsule monster system, limit breaks. And then, of course, there was the ancient cave, which was like this really long, really, really long dungeon, which is kind of the that game's calling card.
Long dungeons?
Very much so. Well, I mean, just like this super in-depth, hard-to-beat dungeon. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Lufia 2 did actually kind of fly under the radar. I'm kind of wondering why that is. Maybe because it didn't come from like one of the biggies, like Square Enix?
Yeah, that could be. I do remember being kind of interested in it, but then I read a review in GamePro saying, oh, this game's not so good. And I was like, okay, forget it. So that was probably a mistake.
Yeah.
It did not get the exploding heads.
I guess not. Oh, and Golden Sun is on the Wii U.
Oh, okay. You know, maybe, was it recent? Because maybe I thought I heard people talking about the game again for that reason.
Yeah, you can have it for $8.
Hey,
Yeah,
give it another go.
You should go give it another go. It's actually, I feel like Earthbound kind of overshadowed it when it came out on the Wii U. But
yeah, maybe that's what happened.
But Golden Sun is still a very worthwhile 16-bit RPG. At Ray Bital, is Legend of Legaia a lesser-known RPG? My nostalgia for that entire era doesn't let me have a real understanding of popularity.
Yeah,
I'd say Legend of Legaia is a pretty kind of a lesser known RPG.
Yeah, it's lesser known, all right. All I know is, and I'll get mauled for this, but I hated that game so much.
Why is that?
I just found it so boring. I hated the characters. I hated the boss fights, which went on forever. Music was nice. But I remember someone broke into our apartment and they stole a whole bunch of games. They stole Suikoden 2, they stole Breath of Fire 3, they stole my original Castlevania Symphony of the Night, my original Final Fantasy 7. They freaking left Legend of Legaia. I was so mad.
They couldn't even take Legend of Legaia. That's incredible. They clearly have taste in games.
Apparently, whoever they were, because they sure took some good ones.
Apparently so. At Chocho Camacho, maybe not less known, but less talked about, Front Mission 3. Amazingly came with two different stories, like Fire Emblem Fates, but in one package.
I never played a Front Mission game.
Great series that I got into because it was sold to me as Final Fantasy Tactics, but with mechs.
Yeah.
Not great comparison, but sad to see the series die.
I can agree with that.
So Front Mission was a Square Enix game, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
So are you familiar with it? It never got a lot of play over here. I don't think the original PlayStation game even ever came out here, but I know that the PlayStation 2 version did.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it kind of flew under the radar. And then when Square Enix was in there, like, well, we have to like hand off our franchises to Western developers phase, they handed off Front Mission to a startup, which was a pretty bad startup, and they turned it into Front Mission Evolved, which was a freaking terrible mech action game.
Yes, I remember now.
Oh my god!
I never played the classic games, but I do remember seeing them in Japanese previews in magazines and whatnot, because I remember how interesting it was to have these mechs, like interfaced with Yoshitaka Amano's artwork. So that always just caught my attention.
Yeah, it's a shame that Front Mission ended up dying. I actually had somebody on Twitter, and maybe it was the same person, saying that we needed to talk more about Front Mission. But alas, I don't have a ton of experience with that series.
Yeah, I'm afraid I can't say much. I'm sorry.
Outside of the PS2 version, but it's a little bit lesser known. But people who love that series really love it.
Mm-hmm.
So they should absolutely play it. At Sean on Games, Secret of Evermore, Jeremy Soule's arcane soundtrack accompanies a journey through a strange land with magic based on alchemy. The Secret of Evermore, I feel like that was a little underrated on the Super Nintendo.
I would love to see that game come on Virtual Console, because I have a funny story about that. I was like, I pored over the previews for that game because I was like on my Final Fantasy VI kick, and when I heard that, oh, Square's making another RPG, I was like, holy moly, got to keep my eye on this, and I did. But then it got delayed into November, because it was supposed to be in September of 1995. And Chrono Trigger came out at that same time, and I only had money for one. And I said, I really want a new game. So even though I actually hadn't really kept my eye on Chrono Trigger, I said, I'm going to go with Chrono Trigger. And then by the time Secret of Evermore came out, I just wasn't interested in it.
That's too bad.
Looking back at it, it looks like it was flawed, but definitely had potential.
So, at Hero with Amnesia, I think you would appreciate this one, Nadia.
Mm-hmm.
Breath of Fire 5, unique RPG that reveals more story on repeated attempts. It's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a great game. I was actually just talking to a friend of mine about that. I've said before on this podcast that I found it too intimidating to really sit back and enjoy as much as I enjoyed, like, 3. But one thing I will say, that soundtrack, holy moly, I adore it. I'll just sit there and I'll put it on while I write.
All right. So I would like to keep this going, actually. So do me a favor, send me an email at cat.bailey@usgamer.net or PM me over on our US Gamer messaging system, or send us a message on Facebook over at US Gamer and tell me what is an RPG, like make your pitch for a lesser known RPG.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to know, like, why do you love these games? Unfortunately, Twitter is not the best venue for this.
Yeah.
So I'm encouraging you to go a little deeper, and we will read these on a future episode. By the way, a little bit of headline news. Might just be a rumor, but the market for computer and video games, which, by the way, I don't want to slag on other sites, but take them with a grain of salt, are supposedly saying that Pokemon might headline an NX Dream lineup. And I was just thinking, of the article that I wrote last week.
Yeah,
which was saying that Pokemon could be the killer app for the NX.
Yeah, they read your article and said, "Wow, that's a good idea," and they got right to making a Pokemon game right then and there.
Yeah, so you should go check that out. I really do think that Pokemon and Monster Hunter could be a really solid addition to the NX. And I'm not saying that it's going to push it over the top, but it certainly helped.
It'll certainly not hurt.
I mean, Pokemon's practically a annual franchise at this point, so having it on your console might actually be good. I think that it certainly hasn't helped that the GameCube and the Wii and the Wii U have not had a mainline Pokemon game in, like, its entire history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, okay, so next week, we're going to be talking a bit more about, we got a whole bunch of games coming out soon. Deus Ex is coming out soon. Super Robot Wars OG Moon Dwellers is going to be in the mail come tomorrow.
Oh, boy.
I'm going to be playing that. I'm trying to get Austin Walker onto the podcast so that we can talk about it. But he's extremely busy because he's the EIC over at Vice Games now, which makes him extremely busy. So I can understand that if he doesn't have time to come on the show, but I really want to come on the show. So you should go, like, poke him on Twitter and be like, Austin, go on the show. Talk about Super Robot Wars.
Yeah, next week would be perfect because I'm going to be on vacation.
Oh, you're going to be on vacation? Cool. Where are you going?
Going to Otakon in Baltimore.
Yeah, well, that's a vacation. You can go hang out with Mike, who is also at Otakon.
He works his butt, yeah. So we're not going to see each other, unfortunately.
Mike is the power behind Otakon.
He really is.
Like, it's actually really remarkable, the amount of work that he does. He's the king of otaku. You have him over on US Gamer.
Yeah, he's very quiet about it, but he is.
All right, US Axe of the Blood God, it can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play now, iHeartRadio, and various other podcast outlets. Please follow me on Twitter at @the_capbot. Follow Nadia on Twitter at Nadia Oxford. I wish I could have had Bob on the podcast to talk about his cover story. He did a really cool cover story on localization. Mm-hmm. Localization horror stories, actually, and quite a few classic RPGs actually get brought up. The Mother 3 fan translation is mentioned. He has a interview with Alexander O. Smith, who did Final Fantasy X, and has some really great insight into Tidus's laugh. Yes, and where it came from. I'm not going to spoil where it came from. You should totally go check out that article. It's really good. It's on the main site. Nadia, do you have anything to pitch right now?
I'm actually going to be mostly focusing on guides for a little while. So my writing on US Gamer might be a little more sparse for a while. But
alas.
Are you cheering the fact that...
No, I said alas.
Oh, I thought you said yes.
I know, I said alas.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We love your insight, Nadia, and you do such a great job.
Aw,
so,
that's good.
Like, we definitely want you to be on editorial as much as humanly possible.
Well, I'll definitely find time to pen things once in a while, and of course I'll still be on From Us to You and the podcast. For now, though, I still have my own site, tinygirltinygames.com, where I recently wrote a thing about Pokemon Go, and I hope you go and check it out and let me know what you think.
It's a really good site, and you should totally go to it.
Yeah, man.
And if you haven't been following our streams at twitch.tv/usgamernet, we've been doing a lot of streams, actually. Mm-hmm. Jeremy is doing a countdown, a Super Nintendo anniversary countdown, where he's counting down favorite Super Nintendo games via stream. And he's done ActRaiser, and he is also doing, I can't remember the other game off the top of my head. ActRaiser is a good one, though.
ActRaiser's great.
And he also did a Metroid long play, which was pretty rad. And Mike also streamed a bit of the Telltale Batman game. Oh, and I beat Ninja Gaiden on our stream just not too long ago. I'm very proud of myself for that. Yes, I did it. I mean, sure, okay, yeah, I didn't make it. I didn't speed run it and break a record and do it without getting hit, but darn it, I did it.
You did it. I can't do it.
You people. I'm not like that. I'm not like these inhuman people. You're just like you.
You're the common man, common woman.
Or the common woman. In any case. So, we'll be back next week. In the meantime, for Nadia and myself, thanks for listening. And until next time, happy adventuring.